If you've made a New Year's resolution, I wonder how it's going. And I wonder if you have a secret for keeping the New Year's resolutions that you make. As I look back at the first week of this year, I can see that actually I've been successful in one of the commitments that I've made for this year. My commitment that for every weekday during 2018, I will eat at least one slice of cake a day. Now you're probably thinking, wow, Adam, how are you managing to keep that resolution? What's your secret to keeping that commitment? What's your secret to keeping it so enthusiastically and devotedly? Well, I'll let you in on my secret this morning. My secret to keeping that resolution is to buy really delicious cakes, serve them onto plates, and sit down in a chair with a nice cup of tea. Now, I don't know if that secret transfers to other resolutions that you might have made, but it's perhaps worth trying out this week. I highly recommend it. But whether we are people who make New Year's resolutions or not, the start of a new year is a time where we find ourselves looking ahead and thinking about things we might want to do differently this year in the hope of making 2018 a better year. Things we might want to do differently as individuals, or things we might want to do differently as a church. And if that's a question that's on our minds, then I think we'll find some help in the coming weeks as we start a new series in the book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah is one of the last history books that we find in our Old Testaments, a few books before Job, if you want to turn there in preparation for the reading. And Nehemiah is a book that tells the story of God's people who've returned from exile, returned to the land that their ancestors had lived in. And there they rebuild the city, and then they recommit themselves to obeying and following their God. And it's a book of two halves, really, and we're going to be looking at the book in two halves. I'll call the halves antenatal and postnatal. And you have that exciting moment as 23rd of February approaches. How long will the first half be? Feel free to put your guesses in now. But we will be looking at it. And one of the things we'll keep seeing, one of the big messages of the book of Nehemiah, is something that Nehemiah says to the people when they're feeling discouraged in their work. When in chapter 4, Nehemiah says to the people, "Do not be afraid. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome." Do not be afraid. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome. And that's one way of looking at what the message of the book of Nehemiah is. That a lot of Nehemiah is Nehemiah's memoirs, him writing about his experiences and what he saw and what he did. But the aim of those memoirs is not for people to remember him, but for people to remember the Lord, who is great and awesome. And that's what we're going to be doing over the next few months as we journey through this book, is we're going to be remembering together the Lord, who is great and awesome. And we're going to start at the beginning in chapter 1, at the beginning of the story, and I'll read the whole of the first chapter. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. Now, it happened in the month of Kislev, in the 20th year, as I was in Susa, the capital, that Hanani, one of my brothers, came with certain men from Judah. And I asked them concerning the Jews who escaped, who'd survived the exile, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, "The remnant there in the province who had survived the exile is in great trouble and shame. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates are destroyed by fire. As soon as I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days. And I continued fasting and praying before the God of heaven. And I said, O Lord God of heaven, the great and awesome God, who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love him and keep his commandments, let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant that I now pray before you day and night for the people of Israel, your servants, confessing the sins of the people of Israel, which we have sinned against you. Even I and my father's house have sinned. We have acted very corruptly against you and have not kept the commandments, the statutes, and the rules that you commanded your servant Moses. Remember the word that you commanded your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the peoples. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though your outcasts are in the uttermost parts of heaven, from there I will gather them and bring them to the place that I have chosen to make my name dwell there. They are your servants and your people, whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand. O Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant, and to the prayer of your servants who delight to fear your name, and give success to your servant today, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man. Now I was cupbearer to the king. May God bless his word to us this morning. How do we respond when the challenges of life seem very big and we feel very small? How do you respond when the challenges of life seem very big and you feel very small as you face them? Well, here in Nehemiah, we meet someone who's facing a big problem and would feel very small in response to the problem. The scene here, just to set the scene of what's going on. All this is happening in the month of Kislev, in the 20th year, which is, we learn from chapter 2, the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, king of Persia. So we're in 445 BC. This is November, December time for us. And we're in a place called Susa, which is one of the capitals of the Persian Empire. It's the winter capital. And we're with this man called Nehemiah. And Nehemiah, we find at the end of that chapter with those words that close the chapter, that he was cupbearer to the king, which means he's a very important official in the court of King Artaxerxes. It doesn't sound very exciting to be the person who holds a cup, but the cupbearer is a person who would present the cup to the king and check for poison. So this means that Nehemiah has daily, immediate access to the king. He has closest access of anyone apart from the king's own family, and he's a highly trusted, highly respected person. Nehemiah, a cupbearer. Now, Nehemiah is a Jew. His ancestors lived quite a long way away from Susa. They lived about 800 miles-ish away. Now, how is it that Nehemiah has ended up 800 miles away from the capital of his ancestors, Jerusalem? Well, about 140 years before this, something very serious happened. Something that God had told his people would happen if they kept being unfaithful and disobedient. And sadly, they heard those words and they kept being unfaithful and disobedient. And eventually a king called Nebuchadnezzar came and attacked Jerusalem and destroyed the walls and burned down the gates and took most of the people away into captivity, took them away from their land into exile, carted them off to Babylon. And God's people were there in exile for quite a long time, until another king, the king of Persia, defeated Nebuchadnezzar and allowed some of those exiles to go back to Jerusalem. And while they were there in Jerusalem, eventually they rebuilt the temple, which is a good point to be at. And now we find ourselves about 60 years after that point, and Nehemiah wants to know, what's the situation in Jerusalem now? How have things been getting on? Hanani, one of his brothers, comes all the way from Judah to Susa, where Nehemiah is. And Nehemiah wants to know, what's the situation with God's people? What's the situation with the city of Jerusalem? How are things going there? And sadly, it's not good news. The report of Hanani in verse 3, the remnant there in the province who had survived the exile is in great trouble and shame. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates are destroyed by fire. The people there are in great trouble and shame. The city is a laughingstock, it's a joke. The walls are broken down, the gates are destroyed by fire. The situation is no better than when Nebuchadnezzar came and destroyed those walls and burned down the gates. And here Nehemiah is confronted with this big problem for God's people, this big issue, this big challenge, this bad situation, that the home of God's people is in ruins. It's not safe for them. It's not just affecting their well-being. This is a case of God's reputation and God's honor is at stake here as well, as people look at this home for his people and just find it a joke. And these people are people who are important in the future working out of God's plan. This is a serious issue, a serious challenge that confronts Nehemiah, the news of how things are there in Jerusalem and there with God's people. A big problem, and what can Nehemiah do about it? He's just one guy. He's just one small man, part of a small remnant people living in a powerful empire. And there's a reason why the walls haven't been rebuilt so far, is that the people who were already there in Jerusalem had tried to start rebuilding the walls, but then someone had put a stop to it. We read about it in Ezra chapter 4. Someone had put a stop to that rebuilding work, and the person who put a stop to it was Nehemiah's employer, King Artaxerxes, the king of Persia. If the walls are going to be rebuilt, if anything's going to be done about this situation, it's his mind that needs to be changed. This is a big challenge that Nehemiah faces. What do we do when a problem seems very big and we feel very small? What might we do in Nehemiah's situation? How do we respond? Obviously, we're not in Nehemiah's exact situation. We don't have the problem of the walls of Lich of Mission being broken down and the gates being destroyed by fire. Although people have been getting a bit rowdy at Coffee Morning recently, so it could happen. But we don't have that situation, but we have our own challenges as a church. As we think ahead to this year, we have challenges that have been on our minds for quite a long time. Challenges of not having the workers that we would like for the activities that we have the opportunity to do. The challenge of not seeing the fruit that we would like to see from our work here. And we have challenges that face us as individuals as well, and those are different challenges for each one of you. And some of you will face challenges this year that you're not yet aware of. But for some of you, perhaps you're already wondering, how are you going to make it to the end of the year? So what do we do in the face of these challenges when we feel very small and perhaps feel a bit overwhelmed by the size of them? Well, we could panic. That's one possibility. We could just panic. Another thing we might do is we might try and make the problem seem smaller than it actually is, where you say things like, oh, it's not that bad. It could be a lot worse. At least it's not as bad as that person over there. Do you ever take that approach to dealing with a big problem? Well, if we don't try and make the problem seem smaller, we can try and make ourselves seem bigger. And we focus on all of our talents and our abilities and our ability to come up with a cunning plan at the last minute and all of the resources we've got and the money in the bank and the people that we know. We try and make ourselves seem bigger. And Nehemiah could have taken that kind of approach, confronted with this challenge of the situation of God's people in Jerusalem. He could have just panicked. Or he could have tried to make the problem seem smaller and himself seem bigger. He could have said, well, it's not that bad. It's not as bad as it looks. It could be a lot worse. At least we've got some bricks there still to play with. And don't forget, I'm the cupbearer to the king. If anyone can solve this problem, it's me. He could have responded like that. And it would have given him a kind of confidence. But it would have been a very shaky confidence that would have very quickly crumbled at some point. A shaky confidence that would have crumbled perhaps when he actually stood face to face with the king and tried to get permission to do something about it. Perhaps when he returned to have a look at the walls and realized that no amount of cupbearing is going to rebuild a wall, at some point his confidence would have crumbled. But Nehemiah takes a different approach. He doesn't try and minimize the challenge, say it's no big deal. He recognizes this is a serious, big challenge. Great trouble. He doesn't try and make himself seem bigger. He recognizes he's a small man in comparison to this great trouble. He recognizes that he's helpless in himself to do anything about it. But he remembers that he's the helpless servant of a great and awesome God. Great trouble, but a great and awesome God. He recognizes he's small. This problem is great, but he knows the right person to get in touch with, the great and awesome God, the God of heaven. And so he comes to that God in prayer. And most of this chapter is the prayer that Nehemiah prays. There's so much in this prayer. We just look at a few things, though, that come to Nehemiah's mind as he prays this God, as he comes, this great and awesome God, as he remembers what this God is like. He remembers that this is a God of great and awesome love. That's where he starts the prayer in verse 5. That this is the great and awesome God who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love him and keep his commandments. This awesome God who keeps faithful love with his people. And the love is most clearly seen in what happens when his people don't perfectly keep his commandments, which none of them did and none of us do. That God always provides a way of forgiveness, a way back, a way to return to him, a way to be restored to him. And so when Nehemiah continues praying And he prays this God, let your ear be attentive and your eyes open. He comes confessing the sins of his people and confessing the sins of his family and confessing his own sins, confessing the ways that he has fallen short of God's standards. He doesn't come trying to make himself look good or his people look good. He doesn't come boasting in his people's achievements and saying, look, God, this is why you should pay attention to my prayer. This is why you should show love to us. He comes saying, we've messed up. We've fallen short. We've disobeyed. We're guilty. But still, as we come to you, as we turn back to you, you love us. So as Nehemiah thinks about this challenge that lies ahead, he knows that the solution is not dependent on his strength and his goodness. It's dependent on God's strength and God's goodness and God's love. A God of great and awesome love. And a God of great and awesome faithfulness as well. Having confessed the sins of the people of Israel and himself, he looks back to what God has said in the past and brings those words now to God, which is always a good thing to do. He looks at what God has said and he takes God's words seriously. God had said in verse 8 that if they were unfaithful, they would be scattered among the peoples. And what happened? They were unfaithful and they were scattered among the peoples. What God said happened. But then God had also said, if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, then I will gather you from wherever you are, even if you're however many hundreds of miles away, I will gather you and bring you back. And Nehemiah takes that part of God's word seriously too. He takes that promise seriously. He knows that God is faithful to his promises. And he looks and he sees that there are people who have physically moved back to Jerusalem and to the land of Judah, but it's a bit of a mess. And the walls are broken down and they're not safe and they're not secure. And Nehemiah knows there is more to come. And so as he looks at the challenge in front of him, he knows that God has promised to deal with this exact situation. And so he prays this God of great and awesome faithfulness. And then he remembers that this is a God of great and awesome power. Verse 10. They are your servants and your people, whom you have redeemed, rescued, by your great power and by your strong hand. Your great power and your strong hand. Nehemiah thinks back to the events of what we call the Exodus, God's people in Egypt, in slavery. Pharaoh, king of Egypt, not wanting to let them leave. Pharaoh thinking himself as a kind of God, not wanting to listen to the true and living God. But God brought them out. God brought his people out with great power and a strong hand. He showed his power so clearly to Pharaoh. Pharaoh thought he was great. He was nothing compared to this great and awesome God. And so as Nehemiah thinks about the challenge that lies ahead and this barrier, this obstacle of King Artaxerxes who had previously put a stop to the building of the wall, he sees this God of great and awesome power. And notice, in fact, how he ends his prayer, how he describes the king of Persia at the end of this prayer. He says, grant him, that's grant me, mercy in the sight of this man. That's an interesting way to refer to the king of Persia, isn't it? This man. That's an interesting way to refer to one of the most powerful people in the world, a person with this huge empire, this commander of this big army, someone who could click his fingers and cause Nehemiah to be executed, someone who could click his fingers and send an army to go and destroy Jerusalem even more. Yes, a great king, but just a man. Next to the great and awesome God, just a man. So Nehemiah comes. He remembers this God of great and awesome love and faithfulness and power. It gives him confidence in his plea for success and for mercy. It's a prayer that for him puts things into perspective. Nehemiah, you could say, prays things into perspective. He sees great trouble. I'm small, but I know a great and awesome God. And the good news for us this year, as we think about our challenges together and as our challenges as individuals, is that God is still the same. God is still a great and awesome God. He's still a God of great and awesome love and faithfulness and power. And we can see that even more clearly than Nehemiah, because we can see Jesus. He had a bit of the Bible, we've got the whole lot. And we can see God's great and awesome love in sending his Son, who came down from the heights of heaven right down to the darkness of this world to give his life, to bring us back to God, to provide a way of forgiveness and restoration for us. The one who came to find us when we were lost, as Paul was telling us earlier. And in Jesus we see God's great and awesome faithfulness, that all of this happened just as God had said it would. And now he gives us promises in Jesus to do us good in the end, that we can be completely confident of. And this God is still a God of great and awesome power as well. If we want to see God's power, one of the places we look is we look to Jesus rising from the dead, defeating death, defeating evil. And the Apostle Paul says that the same power that was at work in raising Jesus from the dead is at work among us now, 2018. A God of great and awesome power. And that's the God that we can know this morning if we know Jesus. Jesus puts us back into relationship with this God of great and awesome love and faithfulness and power. And if you don't know this God and you're wondering how you're going to make it through this year, we're not supposed to go through life on our own. We're not supposed to go through life on our own. We're supposed to go through life in relationship with each other, yes, and also in relationship with God. That's how we were made. We're made to go through life knowing God and being dependent on him and trusting him and looking to his provision and strength. Over the past thousands of years, we've had this experiment as humans of trying to go through life independently from God and not listening to him and not following him. An experiment that we've all tried in different ways, and it hasn't worked. That's not how we were made. That's not how this world was made. And all it leaves us with is we end up dissatisfied, and worse than that, we end up guilty. We end up guilty before the God who made us. We end up heading towards a dark, dark future. But here this morning, if you don't know God, God is inviting you back to him, to come to Jesus, to ask for forgiveness, to ask that he would make you a new person knowing God and living with his power and strength. If you don't know God, that's the best New Year's resolution you could make, is to come to Jesus and ask him to put you back in relationship with this God, this great and awesome God. And if we know this great and awesome God, then as we think about the challenges that we'll face this year, we don't need to panic. And we don't need to pretend that the problem isn't all that bad. We don't need to pretend that we're better or stronger than we actually are. We just need to remember that we serve a great and awesome God. We can come to him in prayer. When we feel helpless, when we feel like we can't meet this challenge ourselves, well, no, we can't. We can come to God feeling helpless. We can pray things into perspective. We can remember that he is a great and awesome God of great and awesome love and faithfulness and power. And we still will make plans and we'll still do stuff. But we'll do stuff and make plans with the confidence that this God is with us. But we're not just trusting in our own resources, but in the resources of the great and glorious God of heaven. We think about the challenges that we face as a church this year. We think about those things we've been thinking about of our need for workers for certain ministries in the church, our longing to see more fruit from our work here. We can't meet those challenges ourselves. But we come to God in prayer and we remember that this God is a God who loves us, his people. God who sent his Son to die for us. And that Son who came says, I will build my church. And behind that promise stands the power of the great and awesome God of heaven. And we come feeling helpless, but we pray. We remember our great and awesome God. Things fall into perspective. Big challenges, we're small, but we've got a great and awesome God. And for those challenges we face as individuals, I can't promise you a particular kind of outcome to those challenges. I can't promise that things will work out at the end of this year as you're hoping that they might do. But if you know Jesus, I can promise that God will love you for the whole year, that he will be with you, and that he has promised to do you good in the end. 2018. We hope it will be a year of many joys and times of celebration, but we know there will be times of trouble and challenge and hardship. We will face great challenges, but we'll face them with the care of a great and awesome God. If you don't know that God, today would be a good day. This year would be a good year to come to know him. And if we do know him, let's keep putting our confidence in him. Amen. We'll sing once more a song where the words may be unfamiliar to a lot of you, but the tune is the tune that we sing, like a river glorious is God's perfect peace. This is a New Year hymn, and I love the words that we'll sing at the end. Resting on his promise, what have we to fear? God is all sufficient for the coming year. Those are words to write on a post-it and put on your fridge when you go home later. God is all sufficient for the coming year. Let's sing together.